Martin Sheen humming.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Rashad Aden, Diamond Salvin.
Hey everybody, this is Joe L. J. Dirksen.
Hey guys, this is Jason Anthony McDonald.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Wapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mollett.
From the Northwest, it is Full Contact Fighter Radio time once again, and I am your host, Kelsey Mollett, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. My usual co-host and partner in crime, Mr. Brendan Lear, will not be joining us today. He's had other non-mixed martial arts responsibilities take him away from this show. And, depending on your point of view, that could be a good or a bad thing. Oh, could be a good thing. Nah, I'm just kidding. Brendan, hopefully not listening to the show. And if you are, I'm just kidding. Brendan will hopefully be back next week. And in the meantime, we've got a really packed show coming up today. We've got Mike Swick coming on the program. He'll be talking to us about taking out David Loazzo last week in a UFC 63. Mike, of course, getting the unanimous decision victory. We're going to have the man, the head trainer, instructor, manager behind Team Tompkins. Mr. Sean Tompkins himself will be coming on the program. His team is crazy busy this weekend, TKO 29 and beyond that. We've got Blake Fredrickson coming on the program from Team Revolution. He'll be fighting George Cazamatis for the Elite FC Lightweight Championship this weekend in Vancouver. So hopefully all those guys will have some interesting stories and comments for us. We are entering into October, which is going to be a crazy busy month. This weekend, you know, being the end of September, there's quite a few cards in Vancouver alone, in Canada alone, I should say. You've got one in Vancouver, the Elite FC, King of the Cage Canada in Calgary this weekend. You've got TKO 29 in Montreal, Quebec. It's going to be held in the Bell Centre. Could very well be the largest Canadian mixed martial arts attendance ever. We'll have to see how that plays out. You've got Rumble in the Cage in Lethbridge, Alberta. In the States, you got Rage in the Cage in Phoenix, Arizona. A couple weeks here, we've got UFC Anderson Silva versus Rich Franklin on the 14th, I believe. I've got that date right. And we've got UFC Ultimate Fight Night coming up. Of course, Ken Shamrock, Tito Ortiz. And we've got a couple Pride cards coming up in just a couple weeks as well during October. You've got the Bushido Finals, the Welterweight Finals, Tourney Final Grand Prix. You have the first North American Pride card coming up as well. Fedor Emelianenko versus Mark Coleman headlining that. So it's going to be a crazy busy month, and hopefully you'll be along with us as we try to cover as much of all this MMA action that we can during the next few weeks. So stay tuned. But in the meantime, let's bring on Mike Swick. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Cage Fury Fighting Championship is coming to Atlantic City Friday, October 6th. This event guarantees nonstop action and a special appearance by Frank Shamrock. The excitement starts the day before at the weigh-in pre-party at the 4040 Club. Don't miss all the excitement. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com or CageFuryFighting.com.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing Full Contact Fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fightwear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic Full Contact Fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a Full Contact Fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com, or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. Joining us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio is Mike Quick Swick. Mike, we appreciate you giving us a call back. How are you doing today?
Oh, no problem. I'm doing good.
I guess the first question for you, Mike, is how did you come out of that fight injury-free?
Yeah, well, I have some soft tissue damage in my left hand and in my foot. I got some inflammation and swelling, but nothing serious. Actually, not a scratch on my face. I had a little bloody nose and some lumps on the side of my head, but came out pretty good, man. A lot better than I thought it would, considering it was David Loazzo. That for sure was going to get cut, win, lose, or draw.
Yeah, of course, Mike, defeating David Loazzo by unanimous decision Saturday night at UFC 63. And I think, you know, some people are commenting, and you can give us, obviously, the insight on this. Did any of David's elbows really land hard in the third round? Like, it looked like a couple did, but then when you got up after the fight, you were hardly even marked, or there wasn't any severe bruising, and like you mentioned, you weren't cut.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think I have really thick skin. It takes a lot to actually bruise my face or show marks in all my fights. I've had over 30 fights. I've never been cut. And I've barely had markings. I mean, I've always had, I don't know, for some reason I just got really thick skin on my face. But, no, he definitely landed some hard elbows. I think the worst ones were from the clinch. He didn't land as solid, when he was on top of me. But, I mean, I was in no danger of getting knocked out, but I was definitely worried of the cut. Yeah. But, I mean, overall, I'm not happy with the performance. I definitely made some mistakes, and, you know, I think Gawaz is a very tough style for me because, you know, I need somebody kind of engaging, especially with the hands on me, to be able to go back and, you know, for them to open up and for me to catch them on the chin or whatever. So when I'm punching someone and he was covering up so well, it was just frustrating. I mean, I couldn't get to his head, and, you know, it was just a tough style, I think.
Now, you mentioned David's style, and do you think that was indicative, Mike, of his style, or is that indicative of his game plan? You know, he's come out and said that he really, him and his camp had really wanted to push you past the first round and maybe sit back a little bit and then kick things into full swing in the second. He clearly didn't really do that in the second, but do you think that's more style, or is it, you know, his adapting to you?
Maybe it was. I saw in an interview afterwards that he came out kind of slow because he knew my aggressive style, and he was just being cautious. But the thing is, I mean, he does cover well, that's for sure. And I've seen some of his earlier fights. It seemed like he was in some slugfest. But in his recent fights, he more so only works when he's in his position. And, you know, his position is the clinch. His position is the kicks from the outside. And his position is obviously being on top of you when you're on your back. And when he gets to those positions, he's a workhorse. He's explosive, and he knows what to do. But I wanted him to kind of get in more of an exchange with the punching, therefore I could kind of get in, and that's why I was, you know, trying to open him up with everything I could, from the taunts to the, you know, the all the kicks and knees and everything. I just wanted him to kind of get in a, you know, more of a slugfest type situation where I could probably land a couple. It was just really frustrating, and then, you know, I had a lot of issues, and I made a lot of mistakes myself, so I mean, I obviously, you know, aren't too happy with the win.
You mentioned that a couple times now. What do you mean more specifically? What would you have done differently?
I think I should have reevaluated some of my strategy a little bit more in the round when I realized that, I mean, I wasted a lot of energy throwing hard punches and flurries, you know, to a covered up Loazo. So I should have saved that energy and used it in more specific ways to where, you know, I would get him to open up more, or use him with the kicks, or use him with the ground and pound. I felt good going into each round as far as cardio, but I definitely did get tired in the third after, you know, the clinch and the ground exchange, which I shouldn't have, and I think that was primarily my training for the fight. I was gone a lot, and I didn't come in how I should have, and, you know, I'm not taking any time off now. I'm going to stay in the gym and stay in shape and be extremely ready and prepared for the next fight, you know, regardless whether it's a title shot or not.
Now, when the fight did go to the ground, you know, David is notorious, and he's even told us on this very program that, you know, he doesn't like to give up his back, but definitely sometimes he likes to go for that reversal, and he's willing to take that chance to get into someone's guard or get on top position and rain down the elbows. How much, you know, it was very obvious that you wanted to stand with him, but how did that affect your game plan as far as, you know, really not wanting to wind up on the bottom against a guy like that?
No, I mean, I had to stick to strategy, though it was hard at times because, I mean, I had to give up the back position twice, which is, it's one of the most dominant positions in a fight, mm-hmm. you know, next to mount on the ground. And I had to give it up two times because, you know, he was going to go for the reversal and I could end up on bottom. And I also didn't go for submissions, you know, any unsure submissions, I should say, because not only is he hard to submit, but he, you know, I could end up on bottom as well. And we did not want to lose for a cut. And we knew that's kind of what his strategy was to cut me. And, you know, he proved that with all of his elbows. So it took away a lot of my ground game. You know, the takedowns I got to work a little bit, which I've been wanting to work on. I've been training a lot with takedowns. So it was good that I got to go in there and take someone down for a change. I mean, I don't think I've ever taken anyone down in a pro fight.
Preparing for someone who's so noted for their elbows, and we asked David that, you know, there's some out there who have argued that perhaps elbows should be taken out of mixed martial arts and it opens up cuts and it's too gory. We've seen that happen a couple times in recent memory. It's most recently Yves Edwards as an example, or on the Ultimate Fighter with Edwin Deweese. What's your vantage point on that, Mike? Do you think that, you know, David's response was, hey, is this mixed martial arts or not? You know, if it is, we should allow elbows, and he admitted it's one of his best tools. What's your thoughts on the place of elbows in mixed martial arts?
Well, had I lost it, it would be a cut. I'd probably have a different opinion. But, you know, right now, I mean, he has a point. You know, it is mixed martial arts, and if we start limiting what we can do, then it's not mixed martial arts. And you know, I'm not much of a noble guy. So, I mean, I should say that I don't like him, but, you know, it's something that I need to be worried about. It's something that I need to work on, and it is part of the game, you know, and that's what makes our sport, you know, so unique and so good to the fans, is that it is a mixture of so many different aspects. I think if we start limiting those aspects, it's going to take a lot of the excitement out. So, I mean, for now, I think the rules are fine, and you know, I had a good game plan on defending the elbows, and I went out there and executed it, and it worked. So, yeah. I mean, if I can go out there with Loazo and have a 3-round fight and not get cut and cut him, I think that anyone else can, you know, adapt to the same thing. So.
Do you see, you know, with Pride coming to North America, they're an organization that doesn't allow elbows. Do you see that affecting that kind of lobby group at all that have called for elbows being stopped?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, Pride's going to have to cut some of their rules back, but, I mean, it's kind of weird. I don't get why they don't allow elbows. I mean, they allow stomps to the face. I mean, yeah. if I look at it from a, you know, a safety perspective, I'm not an expert, but I think stomping a dude's face when he's on the ground is probably a little more dangerous than an elbow.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see their point of, yeah, you know, a possibility of a fighter not being the best fighter winning. You know, I can agree with that. You know, that is true. We've seen that before where a fighter that may not be as good technically won the fight over a cut. But then again, if you use a martial art technique, you know, example, an elbow strike to win the fight, then he did use the technique to win the fight. And, you know, so it's a big debate, but, I don't know. I don't really pay attention to Pride's rules right now, but I don't think it's going to be any. They're not going to be in any competition with the UFC. I don't think. I mean, it's not going to come down to the rules and that type of thing.
The next question for you, Mike, I was going to ask you about is you were talking about a title shot. I saw that you posted on the Underground today talking about that. But for some people who haven't seen that or seen other interviews you've done, maybe talk a little bit about. Where you're at as far as looking for a title shot and why you decided to come out and say that after beating David?
Okay, obviously, I realistically, I do feel I deserve a title shot. Now, that being said, you know, coming off my win over David Loazo, it wasn't a championship. I didn't show championship qualities in that fight. I know that. And it wasn't a very exciting fight. But, styles make fights. And, you know, different fighters would be, I think, a different outcome. And, you know, both Franklin and Silver are both aggressive fighters who would be in my face. They would be throwing, as I would to them. I don't see how it could be a boring fight. When you got someone who is, you know, being very cautious and covering up a lot, it's hard to make for an exciting fight. I mean, I could have came out even more aggressive than I did, and I still think it would have been a boring fight if he had it just covered up like that. It takes two people to kind of tango a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do feel I do deserve a title fight for the fact that I am 5-0 in the UFC. I have fought, five people, including two contenders. And, up until now, I mean, I had a bad night, but, you know, before that, I had four, pretty decisive victories. And, they were over tough opponents. And so I do feel I deserve it. And, if I get it, I'll take it. And if not, then I'll fight whoever. I'm definitely training for a championship fight, this next fight, regardless. And if I get a 3-round fight, then, it's just going to be, I'll be that much more ahead, you know?
Yeah. Well, my last question for you, and then we'll let you get out of here, is who are you predicting is going to win between Anderson Silva and Rich Franklin?
It's tough to say, but I think either one could. And I think a lot of people is overlooking Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
He's a very dangerous opponent. You know, he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He has a lot of good wins. You know, I think he's technically the best striker, probably, in our division, you know,
So
he's got great accuracy, he's got great striking, so, I mean, if he lands on Franklin, obviously Franklin's only loss is by knockout, so it's a possibility Silva could knock him out.
Now, you mentioned some people are looking past him a little bit. Do you feel that, you know, maybe we're still a little bit away from the hype reaching its peak, but do you think that maybe the hype's a little bit less because, you know, some of the new UFC fans are only, they've only seen mixed martial arts via the UFC through television and aren't maybe fully aware of what Anderson Silva's done in his career?
Yeah, and you know, that's what I'm saying. You know, that's why I kind of feel that he got the title shot a little too soon. It's not that he wasn't deserving of it. Obviously, his resume speaks for itself, but I think that they would have, I think he would have more hype. hyped as a fighter, and this whole fight would be a lot more hyped had he came in and had another dominant victory and showed more skills. You know, because 48 seconds doesn't show a lot of the fans, you know, a lot, considering most of the UFC fans probably haven't seen him fight before.
Yeah. Well, and I guess,
so I think it would have just been more of a hyped fight had he came in and fought a couple fights.
I guess I'll ask you one more quick question. What are your thoughts if you can't get the winner of Rich and Anderson? Some people are saying, you know, maybe Chris Lieben. What do you think about that? Try to avenge that loss.
Yeah, I mean, I'll fight whoever. I mean, the thing is, I know the Lieben fight's going to happen, and people want to see it and whatever. But it's like, I mean, I don't want to say a step back, but it kind of is. You know, I mean, he's coming off of a really bad loss to Anderson Silva. Then he came back and won another fight. And, you know, now I'm looking ahead and I see Franklin and Silva, you know, Silva, you know, the guy who basically gave him the loss.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of a step back right now to fight him. And it's more, I think he has a lot more to, well, I guess I can't say he has a lot more to gain, because I definitely want to avenge that loss. But I think that where I'm at now is I know I'm going to eventually. So right now I'd rather have the title shot.
Yeah.
Because I know one way or another we're fighting for sure. It's going to happen. I just don't know when.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to get it. I don't think I'm going to get it any worse as a fighter, depending on how long it's going to be. So, you know, I'm in no rush because I would rather find a fight where I could get a belt, you know, if I win.
Well, there's definitely a lot of possibilities out there, and I know all your fans are looking forward to whoever you fight next and looking to see you in the octagon again. Mike, we appreciate you taking time out, and we wish you best of luck in the future.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Okay, take care.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
Joining us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio is the main man behind Team Tompkins, Mr. Sean Tompkins. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
How was the drive up to Montreal today?
It was good. You know, we're about a 6.5-hour drive from Montreal, so it's not that big of a deal. I remember back in the early years of our travels and stuff, we were driving, you know, 12 hours to Iowa and things like that, so Montreal's a piece of cake for us.
Yeah, I guess. You know, especially now, and you know, you guys, in particular, you are going across the continent on a frequent basis these days.
Yeah, my girlfriend isn't a big fan of it, but
yeah.
I've been all over the place lately, especially these last 2 years. So, yeah.
Now, obviously, the first thing that we're going to talk about for Team Tompkins, most imminent, is TKO coming up this Friday night, and you've got a few guys on the card, some big fights on that card. It's going to be in the Bell Center in Montreal, and this could be, Sean, arguably the biggest MMA card in Canadian history.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know it is because I've been involved in most all of them. So, especially for my team too. You know, we're I've got two guys fighting for world titles. Krzysztof Lozinski's fighting for the heavyweight, and you know, we've been working extensively getting him prepared for that. Boss and myself. And we've got Sam Stout defending his title against Jay Estrada in a huge rematch that I know is going to be a well-watched fight. And then, we've got Hominick fighting. I've got John Frazier and Chris Clement, the guy who holds the record for the fastest knockout in TKO.
Now, you mentioned the Mark Hominick fight, and I want to get into that a little bit. You know,
sure.
On the forums this week and just people generally talking, you've got an insight into what happened. And maybe just from your point of view, tell us a little bit. There's a lot of upset people out there. There's some skeptics about, you know, Mark's fight. He was scheduled to fight Ivan Menjivar, and
right.
Ivan is fighting in a few days in K1. So maybe give us from your perspective and tell us about, you know, Mark getting ready for Ivan and just...
Sure. Well, I mean, I know there's a lot of upset people out there, but I'll tell you the two most upset people are Mark Hominick and myself. I mean, we wanted the Ivan Menjivar fight. We've wanted it to happen for a long time, and, I mean, Mark devoted a lot of his time and some extensive training, and I devoted a lot of financial, you know, money to the show or to prepare for the fight. We spent time, and we really wanted to fight Ivan for a long time. So, I mean, we're very disappointed in it, just like anybody else. I know Samuel Gallette is a good competitor, and it's going to be a great challenge. And, you know, obviously Mark is more than well prepared for that fight. So.
Now, the story is... Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I mean, the thing with us is, I mean, I've heard a few things. I've seen a few things on the Internet and not about the fight. I can only tell you what we know and what we were told. And what we were told is that during preparation for Ivan Menjivar, his coach brought in some amateur kickboxers. He had a real tough time preparing with them. And basically his trainer said, you're not ready for Mark Hominick. And Ivan then talked to the promoter, Stefan Petri, and said, I don't want to fight Mark Hominick. I'm not prepared. You know, which, you know, I know Ivan. I would never think that would happen. But at the same time, I mean, it was not even 2 weeks out from the fight. So, I mean, I've had guys injured before that still do a fight because they're that close.
Yeah, well, that is actually what I was going to ask you. That was the story that's being circulated, is that Ivan decided that, you know, the stand-up preparation wasn't there for taking on a fighter like Mark, and I guess the person we should all be asking is Ivan. But, you know, where does Mark go from here? I mean, you're right, Samuel Gallette is definitely incredible, a great opponent, but, you know, how do you do that mind adjustment, or is Mark just used to having guys drop
well,
out?
I'll tell you, Samuel Gallette is the fight we're doing, but there was eight other fights that were offered, you know, or were offered to eight other fighters to fight Hominick in this fight, and they all declined. So it gets to the point after days and days and days of going through who we're going to fight, to, you know what, we're ready, let's just fight somebody. And I know the biggest thing in Mark's mind this year is getting his title back from Hato Hioki. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the preparation for this fight, we're going to fight. Pretty much anybody that's put on a list in front of Hominick, I feel he's ready to beat anybody in the division right now anyway. So, you know, Sammy Gallette is going to be a little bigger than Mark. But, you know, we've all watched the UFC. Hominick's used to fighting bigger guys. And we're confident in the fight. It's too bad it's not Ivan. It's too bad it's not Hato. But their time is coming.
Now, there's you know, already people are talking about Mark's next fight. I know you guys don't want to look beyond that too much, but can you verify that he's supposed to be fighting Joe Stevenson next in the UFC?
You know what? Everybody's heard that except for us.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's been announced on the Internet. People have been talking about hearing that Joe Stevenson's going to fight Mark Hominick. I've never heard that. Mark's never heard that. And I train quite a few fighters right now at the Zions Training Centers in Las Vegas, and Joe Stevenson's trains there, and I don't know if that fight's going to happen. I've never heard anything about it. We haven't heard anything from the UFC for a fight for a little while, so
okay.
We'll see. I know after seeing the fights the other night on the pay-per-view with the UFC, there's a couple guys we got our eyes on that we'd like to fight. Stevenson is, you know, not really one of them, but...
Yeah, we just had George Gergel on the show yesterday.
Right.
It was posted. I don't know if you heard that. And he was basically still maintains that he thinks that he won that fight against Mark, or basically that no one fight. I shouldn't put words in his mouth. That no one won that fight, and he'd like to see a rematch at some point. Do you guys see that materializing down the road?
Well, I mean, if I lost to a fighter, that's what I'd say too.
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as our camp is. You know, the way we understand the fight, the way we saw it, we had a game plan, we followed it, and we beat George Gergel at every aspect of his game. So I think that, you know, people that really understand the sport, that watch the fight, that have trained before, know that game plans are real important. And if you follow the game plan and get the decision, that's a huge victory on our part. Sorry that he didn't have a game plan or that his game plan didn't work. Saying that you slipped too many times trying to do the takedowns, that doesn't count. Everybody else was doing takedowns on the same ring. So, you know, I respect George Gergel, but, I mean, come on. Calling for a rematch right away, that's, you know, he's got to fight a few more fights to get back into Hominick's category, I believe.
Yeah, well, in fairness, he did mention there that it would have to be down the road, that he knows he's
sure.
Got some work in front of him.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, he's a respectful guy. I know he's a great fighter, and, I think that, you know, any fight's possible now, but there's a ton of fighters in the UFC, and rematches are something that are in the lightweight division aren't going to happen right away, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Well, another lightweight you've got going, as you mentioned, Sam Stout's going to be fighting, defending his TKO lightweight championship against Jay Estrada. We had Sam on the show, I guess, last week or the week before, and,
yeah.
You know, a lot of people these days are just skeptics about hyping fights, you know, like even with George St. Pierre, if you look at UFC 63, the post-fight comments, and then Joe Rogan immediately saying, hey, he's just hyping the fight. So people have already been asking me, is there really bad blood, this much bad blood between Jay Estrada and Sam Soda? Are these comments really getting these guys riled up?
Well, I'll tell you what, as far as we were concerned, we thought Jay Estrada was a pretty good guy. But the things that he's saying, he really did say. And if he's going to live in the past and think that he's still at Sam Stout's level, then he's got another thing coming on Friday night. Sam Stout, I mean, what happened to him with Kenny Florian, that was a bad night, and there were some mistakes made, and that will never happen again. But still, that was him and Kenny Florian, not Jay Estrada and Kenny Florian. And I think the fact that Jay Estrada has said things like that and thinks he's going to get famous off of fighting Sam Stout, he's got another thing coming on Friday night. We'll see. But I just have Matt Danzig and Gray Maynard out training at my gym for a couple weeks. And Gray Maynard's a three-time All-American wrestler. I really don't have to tell too many people who Matt Danzig is. And, you know, I mean, we brought them out for a reason. And Stout's right at that level. So we'll see. Good luck to Jay Estrada.
Another, you know, one of your better lightweight fighters, Chris Horodecki. I think a lot of people are disappointed. He's no longer on the card. What happened with Chris? And he was supposed to fight Samuel Gallet originally, right?
That's right. You know, the IFL fight that took a toll on him. He got caught in a full Kimura, and I think some of the people that saw the fight on Fox Sports the other night on the weekend will know that. I mean, that Kimura was the end tight, and huge props to Chris Horodecki for fighting through it, but. We came down to the wire with the last 2 weeks of training, and you know, he was applying, you know, different chokes and holds on other fighters while we were training, and it was hurting him. And I think what's happened is he's got a lot of scar tissue in his shoulders, and we're not, you know, he's not ready to go back into the ring just yet. I mean, it's unfortunate. We're sorry to Samuel Gallet, but you know, Horodecki just isn't 100%. So, and at this level, you don't take fights unless you're 100%.
You know, we've had Chris on the show as well, and you know, the guy, I think a lot of comments that I hear is it just sort of amazes everybody how such a young kid deals with the pressure, and there seems like there's more pressure building on him now. You know, he's getting, there's more awareness about Chris in the States now because of the IFL, because of the, you know, he said fights with Fox Sports News and Sports News up here in Canada. How do you guys as a team try to keep him from, you know, not getting a bit of too big of a head on his shoulders? You know, how do you keep a kid in check?
You know what? Anybody that meets that kid, you know, being Chris Horodecki, is going to realize that he's special. He's been training with me since he was 14 years old. And, you know, he's been wrestling in school. He's done over 20 kickboxing fights already and won them almost by knockout. He's been a sparring partner for Mark Hominick since he was 14 years old. So pressure to Chris Horodecki, just, I don't know. I mean, it's never been a question. It's never been a problem for us. He's one of the most relaxed fighters I've ever worked with and trained, and this is just second nature for him. I mean, when I work with the Anacondas, you got experienced fighters like Christoph Szczesinski and Mike Pyle and Jay Huron, and these guys they're adults, and they wish that they could be as relaxed as this kid. So, I mean, it's not like any special thing that we do. It's more just who he is.
You know, Christoph is on the show, and he's looking forward to this fight. Tell us a little bit, you know, about the fact that Christoph, you know, he came from a strong jiu-jitsu background, training with Rodrigo Manruca, Joe Dirksen, great school back when he was training there, and he came to you guys to work on a stand-up as well as Bas Rutten. How has that worked and changed his game?
Well, I mean, I think if anybody saw Christoph's career in the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years, they'll see, I mean, he's a totally different fighter. I mean, this guy has the potential to be a major superstar, and I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to be that with the IFL. His jiu-jitsu game, I have always been amazed. He moves, honestly, if you've ever watched him on the floor, get to see him train sometime like a lightweight. He's so fast and so fluid, and many people are going to see that. But, I mean, for a guy like him, I mean, you got to think about it. He needed to improve his striking and his mind game, and he came to me and worked with me, and then, you know, I sent him on to my trainer, Bas Rutten, and I mean, that alone tells you that he's becoming a complete fighter. The fact that he's fighting for the World Heavyweight Championship this weekend or Friday night is going to be a big accomplishment for him. But at the same time, there's no better time in his life to take it, because he's coming off two huge wins. He's been training full time and hard with the right people now, I think, for the last 2 years. And the world is slowly learning who he is, and at the same time, he's slowly learning who he is. So for me, as a trainer and a manager, that's dangerous, and that's what I think Krzysztof Soszynski is, very dangerous.
So you've got several fighters on the TKO coming up that we just mentioned. I also noticed, I believe, Aaron Chiguer is on the main event, the upcoming UCW. Is he still fighting?
That's right. Yeah. He's Aaron Chiguer is, I mean, one of my huge up and coming fighters. He's fighting for the title on Ultimate Cage Wars on October 28th. On the TKO this weekend, I've also got Chris Clements, like I said earlier, who holds the world knockout record in MMA at 3 seconds. I've got John Frazier fighting on the show against Steve Clavo, which is going to be a huge battle, I think. Honestly, I think that will be the fight of the night. So, we're just so super busy right now, you know. The team, this is our big event, though. I've put a lot of time and money into this last 2 months of training and bringing the right people into our camp, and this is, I mean, obviously the TKO show has always been our show, and I have no plans of ever changing anything like that in the near future.
Looking past TKO, what does Team Tompkins have going on? I mean, you guys are heavily involved in the IFL as well.
Yeah, you know, well, I mean, the three major organizations right now, as far as MMA and kickboxing for us, the IFL is nothing but amazing for my fighters. I have two of them involved in it, plus the team of the Anacondas that I'm involved with Boss Rudin. It's been a heck of an experience since I started working with them, and I mean, I think the world's starting to see that. UFC, working with Dana White and Joe Silva, they've been nothing but amazing, too. I mean, there's always people that are going to criticize and things like that, but I'll tell you, from my point of view as being a manager and a trainer, those guys have done nothing but show me respect, and obviously given, you know, three of my fighters some of the biggest chances in the world that they could get. So, and I mean, K1, we're always ready to come back with them with the kickboxing side of things, but, you know, our MMA experience and fights are going to stay with TKO and with UFC and with the IFL.
Now, I guess sort of in a relationship kind of sense, you're going to be working involved with Pride now because you're going to be helping Dan Anderson prepare for Vitor Belfort. He's going to be fighting on the first Pride American card, right?
Absolutely. I mean, Dan and I have a good training background together as far as, you know, we've worked together before and dealt with each other. And I'm going to be heading out there on Tuesday to train Dan and get him prepared for Vitor Belfort. I think it's a huge experience for him, and the fact that he's fighting in Las Vegas, I know he's real excited about it. So, and any chance I get to head out to Temecula, California to train at the Team Quest or prepare their fighters, I mean, it's an awesome experience. The last time I was out there to help Dan get ready for his last Pride fight, I also got to train Mayhem Miller for his fight against Robbie Lawler. And I mean, you got camps that are pulling together fighters with that much talent. I mean, me as a trainer, I can't help but bring that experience back to my own real team. And while I'm out there, I hope to bring up everybody's caliber of striking and defensive groundwork.
Now, my last question for you, Sean, is about Jeff Curran. For some people who don't know, Jeff Curran has helped you guys a lot with your jiu-jitsu programs. You guys do a lot of cross-training with his camp.
Absolutely.
And yours. Were you guys, how surprised are you guys that he lost to Hatsu Hioki? Were you thinking that he was going to win that for sure, or did you think Hatsu was going to give him a lot of difficulties like he did?
Well, I mean, obviously in our mind, because the Hatsu fight, when Jeff took that fight, we could have possibly tried to book that for this show on TKO. But, I mean, I'll be completely honest with you. You know, Jeff's like a brother to me, and I've trained him for a lot of years, and I know his ability on the ground and standing as a boxer. And, I mean, we didn't plan on fighting Hioki for this show because we thought he was going to hurt Hioki. What I stack it up to, and I've seen the fight on tape, I think that, you know, every fighter out there has a bad night, and I think that's what it comes to with Jeff Curran. Just a rough night for him. And Hatsu Hioki is an underestimated fighter when it comes to North America. As far as Japan, I think they've known for a while that he was going to be a future star. And, I mean, he is nobody to take lightly, and we see that right now.
So looking ahead for Jeff Curran, are you going to be helping him get ready for Wagner Fabiano, who he's going to be taking
on? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'll do anything I can for Jeff Curran because I know he'd do the same thing for me.
And perhaps you can give us a little bit of insight on this as well, since you know Jeff. You know, there's another fight that's been kind of hyped as having some bad blood. You know, Jeff objected to Wagner being late and sort of the apparently the way he carried himself surrounding his fight with Jeff's student Matt Fiordosa. Is this all legit too, or is this more of a hyping?
Well, I know that Jeff has wanted to fight Wagner for a long time, and from what I hear on Wagner's side, Wagner's wanted to fight him for a long time. It comes down to, I think, a bit of a jiu-jitsu background war that I'll admit I don't really understand a lot about what happened in the past, you know. But I do know that in MMA, those two guys, and I'm not taking anything away from Wagner by saying that I think he's an amazing MMA fighter, very explosive, and he's had a couple of good fights in the last little while. So the one thing that I think that's going to, you know, with this fight is the one who comes out on top is going to get a lot of very, very positive exposure from it, and is going to, you know, going to move on. And I know Jeff knows that, and I know that Jeff, after his fight with Hattu, is a very determined person and will never take a fight like this lightly. And he only likes to, you know, he's like us. He wants to win. That's the bottom line. And I know that when he goes out to fight, he goes to fight out and show the fans that he's an exciting fighter.
Well, Sean, we appreciate you taking some time out. I know you guys have got a full slate of stuff coming up the next, you know, tonight and tomorrow, weigh-ins, et cetera, for TKO 29 on Friday. So we appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule, and best of luck to Team Tompkins.
Thanks so much, and thanks a lot to the fans who always follow Team Tompkins to give us support. We really appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world.
Cage Fury Fighting Championship is coming to Atlantic City Friday, October 6th. This event guarantees non-stop action and a special appearance by Frank Shamrock. The excitement starts the day before at the weigh-in pre-party at the 4040 Club. Don't miss all the excitement. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com or CageFuryFighting.com.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. Joining us now is the Snake, Blake Fredrickson. Blake, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Blake's going to be fighting George Kazmatis, another local Vancouver area fighter, here on Friday night at the Elite Fighting Championship at the PNE Agrodome. And Blake, is this fight at 170 or 155?
155. It's for the 155-pound Elite Lightweight Championship.
What do you know about Kazmatis? I've seen George fight a couple times, and I think he's still with the Posner Pancration Group, which are all noted for some pretty good stand-up skills. What do you know about George? Have you seen him fight?
I've seen him fight once. I've seen his one loss where he, I believe it was to Mike Newton, he got submitted with a triangle. From what I understand, that George comes from a wrestling background. I guess he started wrestling before he did anything. But he's 6'1", so I imagine, you know, and like you said too, coming from Simon's camp, they're gonna be, you know, probably emphasizing some striking as well, so. I expect he's going to be well-rounded wherever he is, but, you know, like, that's my game, too. I'm fairly well-rounded, and I don't see him being a better striker than I am, nor submissions as well.
And that's what I was going to mention. I mean, you're pretty well known for, I'd say, you know, coming from, I know you're with Revolution now, but coming from the Team Gibson guys originally, yeah. Most of that camp have always been, you know, noted for their stand-up skills, but you are giving up some reach. Are you still planning on standing with George and seeing how you can hang with him there?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because, you know, I've been so, you know, tailored as to fighting guys that, you know, I usually have like a set game plan, right?
Yeah.
And, but for this one, I'm just going to go out and fight him. I'm just going to go out and fight. I'm going to go out and stand up. You know, if I can fight him standing up, great. You know, if it gets you know, a little bit hectic, then I'm going to take him down to the ground and pound him, submit him.
Now, getting back to the training camp, you are with Team Revolution now, correct?
Correct, yes.
So maybe for some of the people out there, if they're, you know, especially if there's Americans listening, tell us a little bit about Team Revolution and some of the more notable fighters that you've been training with.
Team Revolution, we're out actually of Langley there, Langley, BC, and it's we got a whole plethora of guys there now. It's myself, I'm the, you know, the newest member there. Coulter Gill is there, K1 vet, Caleb Starnes, UFC fighter, Todd Gallenberg, Tim Thurston, Tyler Jackson, Adam Ryan, Swords, brown belt, as well as Ben Greer is there. I've been working with him as well. There's so many active fighters there at this time.
Yeah.
That is great. I have, Cajun Johnson is there now as well. So I got a ton of guys that I've been working with, to help me prep for this fight.
What led to the move from Team Gibson? You know, you were originally a Lance Gibson with Lance Gibson, yep. Ryan Diaz, that camp. Coulter Gill is originally there. Any reason in particular that you left, or?
You know, change is good. Like I always say, change is good. And I felt, you know, I'd done, you know, I was pretty much done. I was at a point in my career where I had pretty much decided not to to fight anymore. I, you know, after my last fight with Leninger, I thought that was going to be it. It was just mainly that I needed a change of scenery, and I'd taken a couple weeks off, and Coulter was prepping for Uno, and he gave me a call. Me and Coulter have always still been good friends, even after he had left, and Coulter asked me to come help him out with Uno, and you know, I started having fun again with training and working with a lot more guys and learning new stuff again, and it was great, and I started, you know, liking fighting again. I hadn't for quite some time. And it became a hobby again, and I enjoyed it, and here I am now. I'll be fighting for the title Friday, so I'm liking it again. I'm loving it.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you list that roster that's over at Team Revolution, and you even mentioned a couple guys I didn't even know were there, like Adam Ryan as an example, you know, that's a pretty remarkable roster, you know, and one could even say, you know, it's getting to the point where Team Revolution's rivaling, you know, any fight team in Canada right now.
Yeah, it is exactly. I mean, there's so many guys there with so many different attributes. Like I got, you know, me and Coulter work a lot together just based upon that, you know, we're fighting the same weight class. You know, obviously Coulter is a couple steps ahead of me, but I work with him to get better and better and better. As well as, you know, I got guys like Adam Ryan and Caleb showing me jiu-jitsu, because they got a whole bunch of tricks. Like there's stuff that, you know, I didn't even know existed, and these guys are just showing me, they're tweaking my game so much, and then I got guys for boxing, it's incredible. So, I mean, like you said, yeah, like this gym could rival any gym in Canada and, you know, North America for that matter, I think, too. There's so many different guys there that know so many different things to elevate your game.
Now, going back a little bit into your own career, you mentioned that you had, you know, contemplated giving up fighting. Why did you get to that point where did you just feel that perhaps, you know, there was no future in it for you? Were you starting to, you know, consider, you know, where you're going to be in a few years? Or what led to you know, just getting so frustrated with the fight game?
It was like that, I would say. You know, I had, like you said, I felt maybe that all I could do, you know, I had done, right? I've been fairly successful in my career. But just, you know, maybe at where I was at that time, and, you know, I'm not making, you know, $60,000 a fight or $100,000 a fight or, you know, anything like that. So it's nothing I can live off. I work 40 plus hours a week in my job and training after. And so it was time consuming, and I'm still a young guy. I'm only 24, and, you know, I wanted to get out there, and I've been training pretty much like this since I've been 17. So, you know, I kind of want to go out there and have some fun and stuff like that as well. And I was a little burnt out, but, you know, and I felt pretty much that I'd done all I could really do with fight wise, but after the change, I'm motivated again, and I'm hungry, and I got new management, new teammates, and the sky's the limit for me, I feel, and you know, we already got some things in the works. I don't want to, you know, let the cat out of the bag, but you know, I'm pumped again. I can't wait for this. So,
well, the Full Contact Fighter database has got your record at 13-4-1, so I mean, you're absolutely right. You've had, you know, a lot of success in your career so far. One other aspect of your career I want to talk about, and I'd read a few interviews about this, but it had never been exactly clear to me, and it wasn't a very well-covered story, perhaps, up here in Canada, was right. you fought a few times in the Northwest states, and you had some Pride scouts out there. What were those cards about, and what was that process?
Recently, the last one there, I hadn't fought for Matt. It's actually Matt Hume's organization. I started my career there back in 2001, about 18, 19 there, and I'd fought, you know, a couple of, like, the local guys, like kind of a couple of Hallman's guys, and I bulldozed those guys, and I started, you know, Matt at the time was just getting into Pride, so I'd made good with him, right?
Yeah.
Just, and then recently in, what was it, April, I took a fight on 2 days' notice against Paul Daly, and it was the Pride Amateur Show. Matt was there, and all the guys from Pride, all the big scouts were there, apparently the head honcho guy at Pride was there, and to watch me fight Paul Daly in the main event. And I mean, it was a great opportunity. It was a great fight. I mean, if it was only 8 minutes, it was 1 5-minute round, 1 3-minute round, and I mean, like, we went full tilt for that 8 minutes. He was a little bit more aggressive. He got the nod in the split decision. But like I said, it was a great opportunity. I, you know, it's a blemish on my record that maybe put me one step back again in a big show. But it was a good opportunity, and I showcased my stuff to those guys out there. It was stand up. We were throwing bombs, knees, slams. Took him down. He kicked me in the face. Like, it was a great fight. So.
Well, when we were voting, the Full Contact Fighter writing staff last year, we had a vote on our fight of the year. And I actually voted. I was at King of the Cage. I can't remember if it was Conquest, what the name of the show was. But I was at King of the Cage in Calgary, and I actually voted for your fight with Chris Haidman. That was my vote.
That was a good fight. You know what? When Chris took that fight on 1 day's notice, I was like, oh, man, you know what? He's gonna be fighting scared, like he's got nothing to lose. And that's sometimes the worst, right? Mm-hmm. You fight a guy that's just scared and he's got nothing to lose. I'm like, this guy is gonna come right at me. He doesn't care if he's got nothing to lose. And, you know, I lost that first round, and I remember going back to the corner and Lance saying to me, he's like, you know, you lose this next round, you're done. Like, that's it. I'm like, oh, fuck, he's right. So, I mean, I had to turn it on. I battled some injuries, you know, last year too, that kind of affected, you know, I don't want to make excuses or anything like that, but it was a great fight, but my performance was limited to that. I had actually dislocated a couple of my ribs prior to that fight, and I still went along with it because, you know, at the time I was on a roll. I just defeated Kevin Manderson, and I wanted to keep the momentum going, so I decided to take it. And, it would turn out to be a hell of a fight. I watched it on tape there too, and that comeback, that was crazy, man. I give Chris props for stepping up and taking that fight.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was an extremely entertaining fight, and for the record, Chris was taken out by Blake by TKO in the third round, and it was extremely entertaining. I think some people might have been able to see it on sports on TSN. I think they might have seen the fight too.
Yeah, it was on TSN, and I mean, that thing about like that is it was great exposure. I mean, I'm from a, you know, a smaller town. I'm from White Rock originally. It's about 50,000-60,000 people there. And, you know, when I go back to my hometown, I mean, people will recognize me just from there. And a lot of people that I went to school with, like, man, great fight. That was awesome. So it was kind of cool to see that, right?
Yeah, and you mentioned White Rock, which is a city not too far from Vancouver. And, you know, I talked to a lot of people all over Canada. And Vancouver's still somewhat regarded as, you know, not exactly an MMA hotbed. You know, it seems like there's a lot of gyms popping up here in this area, and that's encouraging. The sport is growing. But what are your thoughts as a fighter? Do you still think Vancouver's got a ways to go to maybe get to a level where the sport is in Alberta or in Quebec?
Yeah, I mean, I've fought Montreal like 4 times. I've been to Alberta, God knows how many times now. And the crowd over there, when you go and fight over there, you can tell how much more educated they are than the fans out here. It is a big difference, and I mean, the Elite show that's coming, they're definitely headed in the right direction. I mean, there's been other, you know, cards out here that, you know, like, oh, you know, I wouldn't pay money to go see them, right? Let alone, I mean, if I could get in free, forget it, right? But they're in the, you know, they're taking a step in the right direction. It's getting more mainstream now. Like, people that, had colleagues that I work with, and people, like, I got a job where, I meet people all the time, and, you know, they talk about it. And so it's getting mainstream, which is good. And, you know, the Elite years. I think he's definitely on the right path, though.
Yeah, I agree. I think Elite, with the advertising campaigns that they've been doing and the way they've been presenting the sport, definitely kind of puts a classier edge to the sport. And I think that's kind of needed in Vancouver. Not necessarily some of the outlying cities as much, but Vancouver, you know, if you just look at attendance, the attendance that's usually common for fights out here, it's, you know, pretty much like half to a fifth of what you would expect in Alberta or Quebec, for an example. But yeah, I mean, it's changing. Yeah. And this is the fact that they're going to the PNE Agrodome. Hopefully they get a better crowd this time around.
Yeah, it's a big venue. Apparently the show is, you know, from what I understand, is close to being sold out from what I hear. So that's good. I mean, the other shows that I've been to, locally, I know you just maybe like 1,200 people there, you know, and I suppose where you go to like Montreal, you know, in front of 4,500, 5,000 people, right? So
yeah,
the draw is definitely getting a lot bigger. Hopefully, it'll be a big crowd there Friday night.
What other prior fight of yours I wanted to talk about, and I remember seeing some posts from yourself on various threads when you fought Fabio Holanda. And at the time, Fabio Holanda had kind of started out his career in a bumpy way, and he, you know, he had beaten your teammate Colter Gill. But some people were kind of shocked at the time that you lost to Fabio, and you were, you know, you came out and you're very humble and gave Fabio a lot of credit, and you said like, hey, this guy is, you know, I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially you gave him a lot of credit for his abilities as a fighter and that he had a very bright future, and you were right. I mean, if you look at what he's accomplished since then, he's turned it around. Does that kind of give you if you look back on that fight now, do you feel somewhat more okay with that loss?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that fight, I mean, I've lost. That was the only time I've ever been finished in a fight. I've never been knocked out. That was the only time I've been submitted. And, I mean, I just wasn't submitted. I was dominated for that 2.5 minutes of that fight. He took me right out of my game. And, you know, one big thing, too, was that I've been doing a lot of groundwork for that fight, but I didn't have guys that caliber, you know, the submission guys, like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. So, I mean, I've worked a ton on my game. Like, we had emphasized ground, get back to my feet, but he completely took me out of my game, and I made one fail mistake. I went for a reversal. He popped my arm pretty badly, actually, that arm bar. It was crazy. I got the pay from that. But I knew definitely that he was going to be something else. He was going to be the next big thing, you know, even though he had a losing record at the time. I was a little skeptical of fighting a guy 1-3 at a time. I'm like, oh, man, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, I'm going to have to knock this guy out fast.
Yeah.
And he had a game plan. He stuck to it, and he was definitely the better fighter that night. And, you know, he recently won his last fight in the MFC, and I know he wants the title. I'm 3-0 in the MFC, and I've beaten all those guys there. And, you know, somewhere down the road, I would like to rematch him. I'm a different fighter. I am now than a year ago. So, you know, I would like to rematch Fabio. He's a gentleman, and you know, he's a great fighter, and I'd love the opportunity to fight him again.
Yeah, I think there'd be a lot of people who would love to see a rematch. Blake, thanks for coming on the show. I just want to go over for people who are interested in going down and seeing the card. There's some really good local talent. Garrett Davis fighting Miles Morola, sorry. Blake's fight, of course, against George Cazamatis. You got Cesar Noita versus Sean Feuer. Hardeep Singh versus Adam Laporte. So there's a lot of guys in. Tim Thurston, another teammate of yours. Is Tim still fighting, Blake?
Yeah, Tim is fighting. Tim has never looked better. He's in phenomenal shape. So I'm actually more excited to see him fight than with my own fight. So.
Well, hopefully it's a good card. I'm looking forward to it myself, obviously being in Vancouver too. So, Blake, thanks again for coming on the show, and best of luck this weekend.
Hey, thank you very much. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, guys. Kelsey Mowat here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Mowat must be presented in business letter format in an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Mowat before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.